You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
On Sunday, Mayor Bloomberg squared off with the new governor, Andrew Cuomo, over the proposed budget cuts to education coming this year. Major Bloomberg said the cuts and Albany rules may force him to lay off 15,000 new teachers hired over the last 5 years instead, because he doesn't have the discretion to leave it to the principals to select them. In addition to budget cuts, there is a controversial new chancellor for New York City Public Schools, Kathy Black, and the mayor is engaged in a legal battle over the United Federation of Teachers with the United Federation of Teachers over public disclosure of names and performance reports of its teachers. Wendy Kopp, founder of Teach for America, is here to discuss the state of education and her new book called A Chance to Make History. It's published by Public Affairs. I'm very pleased that she's on our show today. Hello, Wendy.
Hi.
This is a very challenging time to be in education. Do you agree with Mayor Bloomberg's call to change Albany's rules so that tenured teachers are not protected from layoffs?
You know, I think, first of all, that it will be devastating if we have to resort to layoffs at all. And certainly if we do resort to layoffs, we have to find a way to ensure that we're taking teacher performance into account and making those decisions. I think anything other than that will simply put our kids at risk. You know, I think about as a parent, you know, with kids in the public schools in New York, I'm thinking, are you kidding? Like, we're literally contemplating not finding a path to taking any form of teacher performance into account. I mean, I can't imagine. For my own kids, and the stakes are so much higher.
Kids who go to public school.
Many other kids. My kids are in public school, but the many kids who are in public school who are in much higher need communities, you know, the stakes are even higher.
Well, my own experience in the New York City public schools leaves me with mixed feelings about this whole thing. On the one hand, new teachers brought in excitement, enthusiasm, new ideas, but they were often unable to handle the basics of a classroom, of classroom management, while the old veterans were really good at that, and most of them were still pretty good teachers.
Well, I think we should keep all the veteran teachers who are really good, absolutely. And I don't think we should keep, you know, new teachers who aren't effective, certainly. I just think that we need to be And clearly experience plays a significant role, as we all know, in developing teachers. So absolutely, I would hate to communicate that I wouldn't value experienced teachers. I would. I just think, you know, we need to have not a blunt instrument that only looks at seniority.
You came up with the idea for Teach for America while you were an undergrad at Princeton?
I did.
What inspired you to think of Ivy League graduates committing 2 years of teaching to underserved schools?
Well, I happened to be an undergraduate at an Ivy League institution, and I felt like, you know, I was one of just thousands of people out there, not only at Princeton, but on campuses all over the country who were just searching for a way to make a real difference in the world. And yet we were called the me generation. People thought that we just wanted to go, you know, work for investment banks. And I just thought the label was misplaced and that it wasn't that's what we all wanted to do. It's just that the only recruiters were these corporations asking us to commit 2 years to go work in their firm. So I thought, why don't we go after these people and ask them to commit 2 years to teach in our highest poverty communities?
And why do you think you weren't being recruited by school systems? Is it because they just assumed that you'd want to go to work on Wall Street? Because that's where the money was?
Honestly, yeah. I think that, I mean, I remember my first summer after graduating from college when I was going around trying to build support for this idea of Teach for America, and I had a list of 100 colleges where I said we were going to recruit in the first year. And I remember showing it to the head of human resources in the Los Angeles district, and he literally laughed and said, I'll tell you what, you get students from these colleges to want to teach in my school system, and I will hire, you know, all 500 of them, which was what we were trying to recruit in the first year. People just didn't believe that they would want to do that.
And now you currently have 8,000 teachers serving underserved schools?
We do.
In How
the
many
midst
cities?
Of their 2 years. And actually, we had 50,000 people apply to Teach for America last year. You know, we had 15% of the Princeton senior class, 20% of Spelman senior class, and many others from probably 500 colleges across the country and end up joining Teach for America. They're teaching in 39 urban and rural communities. Here in New York, where we have about 600 of them in the midst of their 2 years, in remote rural communities, we have another 600 just teaching in the Mississippi Delta in rural communities there, as another example.
Teach for America has a reputation for being more difficult to get into than Harvard Law School. But why do you think so many people want to go through the program when so many of them are not going to wind up teaching after they go through the 2 years?
Well, I think it's important to understand. I mean, what Teach for America is working to do is to marshal the energy of our country's future leaders against the problem and the injustice of educational inequity. Just the reality that where kids are born in our country still today determines their educational outcomes and their really life outcomes. And this is a generation of people who want to do something about that and are persuaded that the highest impact thing they can do for 2 years early on in their career is to teach, but who also come to this knowing that this is the beginning and the foundation of what will be a lifelong commitment to addressing educational inequity. For many of them, I mean, more than 65% of our 20,000 alumni are working full-time, long-term in education.
But I'm sure you also know all too well one of the chief criticisms of Teach for America is that the teachers give 110% during their 2 years, and then they go off to grad school and never return to teaching.
I just think that people don't understand what's actually happening. I mean, we're taking people who come into this unsuspecting. You know, 1 out of 10 of them might have taught if it weren't for Teach for America. That experience is completely transformational, hopefully for their students, but also for them. And, you know, it's changing their entire career path and every decision they make thereafter. So literally, I don't think anyone would have predicted that more than 60% of our alumni would be working long-term in teaching. We have 600 of them running schools as principals. Others are, you know, assuming leadership roles in school districts, and still others, and importantly, are leaving and are taking the insight and experience and convictions that they gain through their experience to go out and affect policy change and to work from other sectors to affect change.
My guest is Wendy Kopp, a founder of Teach for America. She's written a book called The Chance to Make History, What Works and What Doesn't in Providing an Excellent Education for All. It's published by Public Affairs. Your son, Ben, interviewed you recently for a school report, and he asked you why you would put college graduates into schools when they have no teaching experience. And what did you tell him?
I told this story in A Chance to Make History because it was such a wake-up call about sort of the counterintuitive nature of Teach for America. And I think the reality is that we have a crisis in our country, and It's an extreme crisis, you know, and it's gone on for decades and decades. 15 million kids live below the poverty line in our country, and by the time they are in fourth grade, they're 3 grade levels behind kids in high-income communities. Half of them will not graduate from high school. The half who do will have a literally eighth-grade skill level. This is a crisis. It requires out-of-the-box solutions, and I just believe that, you know, in the short run, for the kids stuck in that system, they need as many people who are willing to throw themselves in and go above and beyond traditional expectations to meet their needs. But I also think we need future presidents and future senators and corporate leaders and school system leaders who have rare talents in terms of leadership ability and who have the understanding that only comes from having taught successfully in this context.
Well, when I was a kid, there were the IGC classes in, I don't know what other names they've been given, in public schools, and then there was the SP, in which you did junior high in 2 years instead of 3, and then in my school there was also an honor school where they took the certain kids and they sent us around together. All of that's been pretty much eliminated. Isn't that still a good approach so that kids who want to learn will find themselves together with teachers who want to teach?
I am assuming you're referring. I mean, the sad thing is I don't even know exactly what all those terms are, but is it a tracking system essentially?
IGC, kids were put into special classes where they could learn at their own pace instead of just I understand the argument for mixing kids together, but the slow kids do hold back the quicker kids.
You know, I think first of all, I think the most important thing to realize is that, you know, we are underestimating what our kids can do. A Chance to Make History takes its title from the example of a Teach for America core member, Megan Brousseau, who just finished her 2 years teaching in the Bronx. She walked into her class in the first day of her first year. I mean, to your point about, like, you know, you know, what's going to happen if we lose all our new teachers? I mean, this is a woman who walked into her classes of 112 students and said, this is your chance to make history, and charged them to take and pass the New York State Regents exam in biology. And, you know, the in my book, I kind of chronicle the levels of energy and discipline that she and her kids put into ultimately reaching that goal. And, you know, these are kids who many people would have thrown up their hands and said they shouldn't even take the Regents exam. They are second language learners growing up in poverty. You know, they're far behind academically when they start the year in terms of reading levels. And yet, in the right environment, with the expectations staying high and the extra supports that they need, you know, they're excelling on an absolute scale. And I think that's the risk of tracking systems. So I'd rather invest in ensuring that all of our kids have are met with the expectations and the extra supports they need to meet them.
Do you know how many of the Teach for America teachers are unable to complete their 2 years?
About 10% or don't finish. So that means 90% of these folks,
that's pretty good.
You know, who are early on in their career trajectory. I mean, I'd love to look at other, you know, it's very strong.
Do schools approach you for teachers, or do you find the schools?
There is tremendous, I mean, they're probably our biggest supporters in the world are school principals and the school districts where we work.
Our listeners have been writing in. Leah in Harlem writes, what about the benefit to workers such as teachers of unions and the threat to unions that we see in the charter school movement? I was going to get to charter schools, but might as well get to them now. Also, to what extent does the increase in the number of applicants to TFA have to do with the economic crisis?
Well, to take the latter first, you know, there was such tremendous interest and all in Teach for America far before the economic crisis. You know, we were seeing 40% a year growth in the numbers of people applying to Teach for America. I will say I think the silver lining in this economic crisis has been, you know, just sort of the license that it gave our most promising future leaders to think differently about their futures. And Teach for America has worked to jump right into that window of opportunity, and we're going to continue working to build on that momentum. You know, I think what's important is that teachers are, you know, we need to make an all-out effort through lots of changes at every level of our education system to attract and develop our teaching force and to retain, you know, the people who are out there working hard to meet the needs of kids. We need to invest more in everything from teacher compensation to their development, et cetera. And I think we need to see leadership for that coming from within districts and coming from within unions and whatnot. But I'm losing track of the question. I think many of the teachers in the charter schools feel very well taken care of. I mean, I've spent a lot of time over the last year talking with teachers in some of the highest performing schools in the country that are serving low-income kids. Some of them are charters, some of them are not. But universally, these are teachers who feel like their development is front and center. And I think we need to get to a point where all of our schools are operating that way.
Some people feel that the charter schools are a way of undermining the public school systems and winding up separating the – well, first of all, you have these lotteries, so mm-hmm. there's a certain amount of luck, and then the best kids wind up in the charter schools and the other kids wind up in the public schools, and then we look at the statistics and say that our public schools are failing us.
You know, well, charter schools, of course, as we know, are public schools.
But we're talking about self-selected children with parents who advocate for them.
Well, I think what charters are doing and what some of the school systems, and certainly here in New York, the school system itself have worked to bring the principles of charter laws inside the system, you know, where, you know, we're holding principals accountable for results and are pushing out, giving them far more flexibility than they've ever had over who they hire and how they spend their budgets and whatnot. And I think what we've seen is that the charter laws have given some very dedicated people and talented educators the freedom they need to meet the extra needs of kids. And hopefully we can bring those principles into the regular system as well.
Since New York State won the $700 million in Race to the Top funds, why are we even talking about cutbacks now? Is $700 million not very much money, really?
It's not exactly. I mean, you know, it's not
I'll
as much
it.
As it's good that we need every additional dollar, but it's not going to get us through the current crisis.
Do you like the Race to the Top competition?
I think it generated a level of policy change based on, you know, the principles that have, you know, that we see at work wherever we see truly transformational change for kids that I don't think I'd seen in the two decades I'd been at this. So I think it's been a huge thing.
Do you place any of your teachers in the charter schools?
We do. We place about 80% of our people in regular public schools and about 20% in charters.
Davis Guggenheim's film Waiting for Superman makes the case that America's future depends on good teachers, but he doesn't shy away from arguing that coddling bad teachers by unions virtually ensures mediocrity. And many people have seen that film, in fact, as an anti-union film.
I think we need unions to change, and at the same time, I think we need districts to change. I mean, I think, you know, teacher dismissal rates are about 1% across all of our states, right? Some of these states have strong collective bargaining and some don't, you know. Some have high levels of unionization and some don't. So clearly, we need a complete sea change in the way we all think about this. And I think if we can reach the point, and there are signs that we can, where our leaders, our union leaders, our district leaders, you know, recognize that, and others who can support them recognize that we need a sea change in the way that we think about this. I think then we can make real progress.
The per student spending on average in New York City is $12,500, but we all know that local schools the ones in higher income areas have very active parent associations that raise lots of money on their own to improve the per student spending. Some public schools almost operate on the level of private schools. What about that?
Well, I think, you know, I guess what I keep coming back to is, you know, the reason I wrote A Chance to Make History is that I've seen over the last 20 years that, you know, it is absolutely possible to provide kids who face all the extra challenges of poverty with an education that truly transforms their academic and intern life prospects. And you know, I do a lot in the book to try to delve into what is the answer? You know, is it more funding? Is it more, you know, is it union contract change? What is it? And, you know, on the topic of funding, I think we'll all come to see that we need to spend more on education. But at the same time, unfortunately, this is not as easy as throwing money at the problem. And even before we do that, there's so much more we can do with the resources that do exist. There are probably, I don't know, there are hundreds of very high-performing schools today that are showing us that it's possible to put kids in urban and rural areas on a trajectory to graduate from college at the same pace as kids in other communities that are not spending any more than the public schools next door that have dismal results. So,
if you are going to become a teacher the old way, you have to take a lot of ed courses. What did the teachers' colleges think of your approach?
You know, we partner with teachers' colleges because our core members enter them to gain certification during their 2-year commitment. And we have many fans in the teacher education community. You know, but I think there's an ongoing debate about you know what the existence of Teach for America says for schools of ed. Personally, we don't believe this is the only path to, you know, creating great teachers. We just know that it's one way that's working based on the studies.
Amy in Manhattan asks, can Wendy comment on how having experience in different fields affects how TFA participants teach?
You know what we've found to be most important is that the people we bring in to Teach for America possess real leadership ability. I think over time we've come to see that teaching successfully in this context is an act of leadership. You know, you think about Megan Brousseau, the teacher I mentioned earlier. I mean, she operated like the most successful leaders would operate anywhere. You know, she set the big vision of here's what we're going to be at the end of the year. She got her kids to own that vision, to work incredibly hard to get there. She was incredibly goal-oriented, and she did whatever it took to get there. I mean, ultimately, nothing short of that level of leadership is going to work for kids in terms of giving them the truly transformational experience they need.
So it didn't bother you that the mayor named Kathy Black to be the new chancellor, even though she had had no experience in education and hadn't even gone to public schools?
You know, I mean, I think one of the things that I've come to believe is that a lot of this in terms of, you know, managing school systems effectively, I mean, this is about all the basic principles of management and leadership that account for success in other sectors. So the extent to which the mayor believes that she is an extraordinary manager based on her experience, I mean, that has, you know, she could bring a tremendous amount.
A listener left a comment, a well-regarded and well-educated teacher I know who has worked in poor public schools and rich private schools says that a teacher isn't worth his or her salt for the first 5 years. How would you respond?
Well, you know, Megan's students and the students' parents would certainly not respond in that way. I think what we've seen is that it is absolutely possible for even first-year teachers to make a literally life-changing impact for their kids. At the same time, you know, experience is important. So,
The saddest part, I know that you don't have enough teachers out there to really change this, but the achievement gap hasn't really narrowed in the past 20 years.
It has not. And so, you know,
is it just a matter of getting the right teachers into those schools?
I think that ultimately I think that will prove to be extremely challenging short of, I mean, we need an all-out effort to recruit our most talented future leaders into teaching. It's just that it will be much easier to build an effective teaching force if we change the system and build schools that have strong cultures and the leadership that's necessary and that operate in the way that you need to operate in order to set teachers up for success. What I would say, though, to your larger question is that, I mean, I have such optimism based on what I've seen in the last 20 years. 20 years ago, the prevailing notion based on all the research that existed out there was that students' socioeconomic background predicted their educational outcomes. Today, we know it doesn't have to be the case. We have hundreds of proof points, whole classrooms, and whole schools, hundreds of whole schools that are showing that we can, through education, put kids on a totally different life trajectory. And the reason I think we haven't yet moved the needle in an aggregate sense is that instead of embracing the lessons that emerge in these examples of the schools and the school systems that are changing, we end up lurching from one silver bullet to another. So I think we just need to step back, center ourselves in the core lessons, and make a commitment at every level to affect the fundamental long-term changes it's gonna require to really get where we need to be.
Wendy Kopp is the founder and chief executive of Teach for America, the co-founder and chief executive of Teach for All, and the author of One Day, All Children, Now a Change to Make History, written with the help of Stephen Parr and published by Public Affairs. Thank you so much for being with us
today. Thank you for having me.